Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, you know, we just talked a couple of days ago about how those who are not exactly dyed-in-the-wool conservatives are now pretty much saying that the stimulus plan was ineffective, essentially saying it was a failure. And now we're even seeing a little bit of a change in strategy from the Obama campaign itself. David Axelrod went on John King USA on CNN and was in the moment talking about a plan the president has to have manufacturing companies train community college students so they can hit the ground running potentially in a manufacturing job. And here's what Axelrod had to say at the end of that.
I would think people would be for that. They should be for that. But if they're not, then that's what elections are about, John. Right. And, you know, and that's something that I think is important to understand. Elections are not referendums. Elections are choices.
And that's because this administration has nothing to run on other than an economic plan that didn't work, a health care plan that everybody hates and is trying to get out of, and, oh yes, mounting and mounting debt. So their only option left, it seems, and they're tacitly admitting this, Jim, is to crush their opponent in any way possible.
Oh, Greg, you know, as you're going through that litany, I just want to point out you missed something. It's an unconstitutional abomination on health care. That it's, you know, you forgot that angle, that it's probably going to get struck down at some point in the next year, or at least we can hope. As I heard Axelrod saying that, one of the things that came to mind, I've heard this recently. I heard this from Nancy Pelosi leading up to the 2010 midterms. I remember Republicans making that argument in the 2006 midterms. And I seem to remember Democrats insisting they wouldn't lose the House because as much as there were, you know, the country was frustrated with Congress, elections are not a referendum but a choice. Well, very often they're a referendum on the incumbent. I suppose there are circumstances you can find examples of this. I think obviously if the Republicans were to nominate someone who was just flat out seen as unacceptable, not credible as a president, not credible as a person who could lead the country, then yes, Obama could argue that this was a choice and that he'd be the better of the choice. But very often elections are referendums because when things are going well, incumbents tend to return to office. And I think what we're seeing is the idea that it's morning in America, the idea that things are getting better is becoming a harder and harder argument for the Obama team to make. And so they're going to have to say is, look, we know you're not happy with the way things are going, but isn't the opposition such a monster? And, you know, that's a riskier strategy because people might say, you know what, let's try the monster.
Like we've mentioned before, there are basically two things you need to do when you're running against an incumbent. Make the case that the incumbent shouldn't keep their job. That case is getting easier and easier to make. And like you said, the second part is to make sure that there's a credible alternative, that that person is right for the job or at least better for the job. And that's still a question mark since we don't know who that nominee will be. But judging from who is likely to be, I think it's going to be harder and harder to make the case that they're not acceptable to the job if the economic numbers continue the way they are. On to number two now. And when considering who that option might be for the Republican Party, it's looking less and less like it's going to be former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, whose apparently most famous contribution to this race so far is this quote from Meet the Press.
I don't think right-wing social engineering is any more desirable than left-wing social engineering. I don't think imposing radical change from the right or the left is a very good way for a free society to operate.
That might be the legacy of his campaign since, as most people probably know by now, all of his senior staff and anyone with any significant position in his campaign basically walked off the job on Thursday just as Newt was coming back from his trip to the Greek Isles, which I'm sure was an effort to burnish his image after the Tiffany scandal.
He was studying the Greek financial crisis. That's my that's the spin I'm expecting we're going to hear. You know, one of the things about from the very beginning, I mean, one of the things that's been fascinating about Newt was here's a guy who was Times Man of the Year in 1994. Went head-to-head with Bill Clinton and was, you know, effectively the leader of the Republican Party back in the mid-90s. Leaves Congress in 1998. And for a lot of these guys, you figure, okay, he's going to take some time in the private sector, make some money. But you kind of figured at some point in the intervening 16 years or so, he might have decided, you know what, I want to run for office again. And he didn't. Not didn't run for Senate, didn't run for governor of Georgia, only until now running for president. One of the things that's kind of been, you know, lurking in people's minds is, one, have his campaign skills atrophied? Is this a guy who still knows how to do the, you know, working a room and working a crowd and all that stuff? You know, Newt always gives good speeches, but it's always to go out and promote his seemingly endless 5-point plans for American renewal, not, hey, go out and vote for me. And also just the, you know, presidential campaigns are absolute marathons and pains in the neck. And you got to, you know, constantly meet every low-level party official in Iowa and you know, when they promote their latest crazy scheme, you got to nod and say, it's a fantastic idea. I'm going to look right into that. This is part of what you have to do for being a presidential candidate. And it was coming increasingly clear that Newt had no interest in doing this. That, you know, a couple of the Republican consultants I spoke to yesterday said, I've never seen anybody declare they're running for president, spend about 2 weeks doing that, and then go on a vacation for 2 weeks. Now, obviously, it's early in the cycle, but for anybody who had doubts about whether Newt had the discipline and the willingness to do some of the frustrating and not so fun things that are required to be a successful presidential candidate, the indication was no. And it sounds like his staff very much wanted him to do it. And he and his wife argued that he didn't need to do it. And they kind of realized that this was not a campaign that that had come out of the, you know, began with all kinds of problems and was not likely to solve any of those problems. And as has been widely noted, many of the folks who left yesterday have ties to Rick Perry, and so now there is an extraordinary level of interest and speculation in the idea that Rick Perry is going to run for president.
Yeah, certainly true. And obviously Gingrich officially at this point has not gotten out of the race. He says he's going to continue, and so there might be brighter days ahead for him. But the sad part for him so far, Jim, is the 2 weeks that he spent on vacation was the highlight of the campaign so far, because the first 2 weeks were spent entirely in damage control due to damage that was completely self-inflicted. So
yeah, and when you play that quote, what he said about Paul Ryan, like if that's the biggest impact he has on this entire presidential race, and you know that he provided a soundbite that every Democrat will use against every Republican, he really would have been much better off not running.
Yeah.
Would have been better for everyone. Okay, and so, he could have enjoyed the cruise.
That's exactly right. On to martini number three now. And while Gingrich is still in and there's speculation about Rick Perry, there's still speculation, of course, also about Sarah Palin. I still have strong reservations about whether she has any intention of getting in. I don't think she will. The mainstream media not taking any chances here, because after a lot of prodding, more than 24,000 email messages from the time she was governor are now released. And the Washington Post and the New York Times are so excited to dig through here and I'm sure find all the things that were glowing about her administration that they are actually soliciting readers to help them. In fact, here's a story on WashingtonPost.com entitled Help Investigate the Palin Emails by a guy named Ryan Kellett. And the lead paragraph is more than 24,000 email messages sent to and from Sarah Palin during her tenure as Alaska's governor will be released Friday. Join the Post in digging through them. We are looking for 100 organized and diligent readers who will work alongside Post reporters to analyze, contextualize, and research the emails. Think of it as spending some time in our newsroom. Jim, I can't imagine them doing that for any Democratic emails that may have come up from the past, or really even anyone else. There seems to be just this special fascination or really obsession with Sarah Palin on the left and when it comes to the mainstream media.
This is an insane phenomenon on many different levels. I say this as somebody who's written a handful of articles for the Post news pages, not for the opinion pages. I guess they don't pay reporters anymore. That's the end of that. It's the end of paid journalism, Greg. I hope you enjoyed your career, because apparently now you can just say, hey, people, come on in. Spend time in our newsroom. Do our jobs for us. We won't pay you. And sad to say, there are actually some people who presumably will do this. Now, they're not going to get diligent, you know, even-handed folks who are going to do this. The only people who would commit the time and energy and effort to do this are people who are filled to the brim with a ferocious loathing of Sarah Palin. Obviously, anything that's in those emails, they're going to scream is a giant blaring scandal. I got to be perfectly honest. If I had enough time in my lifetime, would I go through them just for to see if there's anything of news value? Sure. But chances are, my guess is you're not going to find anything particularly shocking or surprising or scandalous. And kind of tying back to something I talked about at the beginning of the week, the new documentary out from Stephen Bannon called The Undefeated. A couple of readers had said, you know, Jim, this sounds like a really interesting documentary, but is it really going to change anybody's mind about Palin? And to be perfectly honest, I think opinions about Palin are pretty well set. I think some people might be interested to see what things were like for her as governor before she was picked as McCain's running mate. But by and large, you know, the true diehards are going to go out and watch this documentary and love it, unless they bring their friends who are not Palin fans, and something in that documentary changes people's minds. This is, you know, not really going to have a big impact on public opinions. I think the same thing with these emails. I mean, maybe they find emails of her saying, oh, can you believe state official so-and-so is a doofus or something like that? I mean, it's possible you'll find something that'd be kind of amusing. But in the end, I don't see this making a big impact on a potential Palin presidential bid or on public opinions of her favorability, unfavorability, or anything like that. But I mean, look, maybe they'll find some smoking gun in there. That's the thing about 35,000 documents. You don't know what's in there. But the idea of a lot of routine, boring correspondence between the governor and the staff seems like what's going to be a vast majority of those messages.
I think MSNBC is licking its chops here. I think they can probably squeeze out 24,000 hours of programming here. Maybe replace lockup on the weekends or something with all this programming, because Chris Matthews could probably get a couple of segments off of a typo and just try to extrapolate that into why she's a blithering idiot, because that's basically what he tries to say about her anytime she says anything. So I'm sure people will be frothing at the mouth over the slightest incidences in these emails. And ultimately, unless there are a couple of bombshells in there, all of it will be essentially wasted time and amount to just about nothing, because, as you said, people pretty much know what they already think about Sarah Palin. So, Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Look, Greg, look at the bright side. At least we'll have a better weekend than the people going through those documents.
Exactly right. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.